fourth, and we are hoping that it is the last time for the Rules Committee, but we will never say never because then we'll have to open again. So, public hearing on House Bill 3457. Senators Brzezinski, Burdick, and Representative Olson, welcome. Take it away.
Senator Brown, Madam Chair. Thank you for taking this time for us. Andy Olson is my name, just for the record. Thank you, Senator. Anyways, kind of a neat opportunity to be here in front of you right now. And, I mean, a lot of hard work from a lot of folks, and a lot of thanks goes. But I'd like to move and have you accept the Dash 14s into this House bill. And I think it will be an extremely great tool for what we need for law enforcement. It will also be a great measure for protection to the public, what was a concern years ago and still continues to be a concern. But also it brings the revenue, or directs revenue for what we need for restoration of families too. They're dealing with abuse as well as for drugs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Jenny Burdick, represents the people of Senate District 18. This is a good compromise. I want to commend both Senator Brzezinski and Representative Olson for hammering this out. Frankly, I don't think we would have been here if the original Measure 3 had been written this way, which I think would have been a good way to write it. And it's my understanding that the parties have agreed that regardless of what the court does, whether they throw it out or keep it in, we're going to make sure that this is the law of the land, and I think it is a very reasonable compromise.
Thank you. Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I also want to give accolades to everyone that's worked hard. You're going to hear from the certified smart, the ones that were down in the trenches next, so we're kind of just in the warm-up. But it is something that I'm very privileged to be part of the group that's really sat down and worked out an Oregon solution to the issues that are before us. And I think that this is something that many of us who were involved with the Measure 3 were looking to accommodate. We weren't able to do it through that process. We're now here. We believe it's been has been reached. And with that, I hope that you will, in fact, support it, because it does have the basic principles and fundamentals that most of the voters, I believe, that was in support of Measure 3 wanted to have, which was requiring the conviction prior to having the government actually take the final step of forfeiting of the property. And also will, in fact, get and divert revenue that comes in from these asset forfeitures to the correct places, including making certain the teams that are necessary to make the bust and regulate this industry in this area will be able to do that, and just as important, making sure that we have money going into prevention and treatment.
Thank you. I'm really pleased that you all are here today and bringing us this compromise proposal. I said the other day I thought this was a miracle. I truly believe that. This one probably won't get written up in the press anywhere, but I think it's truly one of the most incredible compromises we've made this session. Questions for the panel? All right.
Madam Chair, if I could just one thing. I think both Representative Olson and I would just want to correct the record. We don't see this as a compromise. We actually see this as an opportunity for people getting together at the table and really hammering out what was the solution.
Right. It's fabulous. Okay, better yet.
You know,
Mr. Fidanke, Mr. Shepard, and Mr. Hendricks, did you want to come forward? Mr. Hendricks, any comments you might wish to make for the record?
Nothing, Senator Brown, unless anybody has questions about what these amendments specifically do. You'd like me to kind of give the 50,000 foot?
I think that'd be great. And I also have to say, for the record, I know you received these amendments, what, about 4 o'clock? Was it yesterday or the day before?
The day before, but even they turned out about 101 pages, and fairly complicated amendments, but I think the principles that are in there, the real complications on it is the fact that a good part of our civil forfeiture law sunsetted last Sunday. Part of the compromise that was made back in 2001 with the legislation was that sunset placed on the changes to the civil forfeiture law and on the very existence of the criminal forfeiture law. So criminal forfeiture as of Sunday went away. Civil forfeiture went back to where it used to be before the 2001 laws were enacted that were designed to implement ballot measure 3. So a lot of the complexity arose out of that. But let me just tell you, the amendments, what they do, first of all, is they resurrect criminal forfeiture and make it permanent. So criminal forfeiture is back on the books. Criminal forfeiture is a procedure whereby property seized that is believed to be instrumentalities or proceeds of a crime are forfeited in the criminal proceeding itself. And there's a special process you go through, and at the very end, if you get the conviction, you've got the property, you go to a second proceeding where you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that these are proceeds or instrumentalities of the crime, and then you can forfeit them, and the money goes off in different ways according to statute. So it is back on the books. The only change that was made to criminal forfeiture that we added was the opportunity for the court to forfeit property of a fugitive upon motion of the state in certain findings. It would allow the court to say if someone skipped out and left this property and it's got a warrant out from them and they can't bring him back, the court can go ahead and order the forfeiture of the property without going on to the conviction. So that was the only substantive change made to criminal forfeiture. Civil forfeiture was allowed to return to the condition it was in before 2001. So it went back to where it was before. What was important and what brought about the agreement of all the parties were the changes that were made to civil forfeiture. And the most significant one was the basic element of ballot measure 3. Civil forfeiture will now require that somebody be convicted of a crime. That didn't used to be the case underneath the law prior to 2001. You could do a forfeiture even though nobody was ever convicted of a crime that you could attach the property to. And the qualifications that were put on that in the set of amendments is that the standards of proof are changed from what they were either under any of the previous versions of the law. The standard will now be a preponderance for purposes of forfeiting personal property, clear and convincing evidence to forfeit real property. So real property will be harder to forfeit than personal property. The other significant changes that were made in civil forfeiture were the fugitive disenfranchised one, similar to what we did in criminal. We incorporated that into civil forfeiture. Actually, that was in civil forfeiture, but we modified it somewhat. The most significant additional change, though, was in the distribution. The old distribution is pretty much has been largely modified, and there's a whole new list of entities now to whom money will flow from the proceeds, including drug courts, and relief nurseries, and I'm not sure exactly all.
And more to the drug lab cleanup.
More to the drug site cleanup fund, and that's the big ones. Maybe someone else can help me if you see additional changes there that you thought were significant as well.
Madam Chair, I defer to Mr. Fedanke if he wants to begin there.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, David Fedanke, Executive Director of ACLU of Oregon, also testifying in support of the Dash A14s. I'm also speaking on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Michelle Burrows has been involved in these negotiations as well and is very supportive of these amendments. And just to give a little bit more of a 50,000-foot view down at this 101-page amendments, the civil forfeiture provisions in this bill cannot take effect immediately, as Senator Burdick mentioned. We've got the court case still pending in the Oregon Supreme Court. These amendments are not wholly consistent with the requirements of Ballot Measure 3, but we are very supportive of these provisions. And certainly if ballot measure 3 is ruled to be a multiple amendment by the Oregon Supreme Court, assuming this bill passes, ACLU would not be part of any new initiative effort to try to reenact ballot measure 3 through one or more amendments, as long as these provisions are in place. As Senator Brzezinski said earlier, the key provision of ballot measure 3 was the requirement for a criminal conviction before a civil forfeiture could be finalized. And for the first time, that is included in this bill. And that was the key agreement among all the parties that has everyone on board these amendments who's in the room today. And the key provisions show up on page 57 of the dash A14 amendments in section 30 of the bill. And what we did was essentially adopt the standard that had been in place in the 2001 criminal forfeiture law, which is that the connection between the property to be forfeited and the crime of conviction is that those proceeds or instrumentalities have to either relate directly to the crime of conviction or to a similar crime carried out as part of that same criminal enterprise, I think is the intent. That last phrase is not in the bill, but I think that's clearly what we all have in mind. And the classic example is a drug dealer where the police do a controlled buy situation. They may be able to convict that offender of sale of a controlled substance, but they have enough evidence to prove in a civil forfeiture case that that individual was involved in a pattern of illegal drug activity and amassed proceeds and used various properties in the course of that criminal conduct. And this language will allow the government to forfeit those proceeds of criminal activity, even though they may not have convictions for 50 sales of controlled substances, as long as they can show, as long as the government can show by a preponderance of the evidence that all of the personal property was related to that course of conduct, they will be able to forfeit the property. And in the case of real property, they would have to meet the burden of showing that by clear and convincing evidence. So that is the key provisions of this bill show up on pages 57 and 58 of the amendments. The fugitive disentitlement provisions have also been amended in this version to deal with the concerns that the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association raised at your last public hearing on this issue. And we have incorporated essentially the same standards that are now in federal law in order to avoid any federal constitutional problems in the civil forfeiture context. So we feel good about that as well.
Thank you. Mr. Shepard.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pete Shepard. I'm the Deputy Attorney General. Mr. Fedanke and I sat at a table in another hearing room in 1989 and described the original forfeiture law to your predecessors. And have been involved in these issues since. On behalf of Attorney General Kulongoski, I prosecuted forfeiture cases for the brought to us by the Oregon State Police, and Attorney General Myers himself has been a strong and steady supporter of the concept of civil forfeiture. Today, as we sit here today, if a state trooper busts a driver for possession of a commercial quantity of methamphetamine, no state law permits the community to deprive that individual of the down payment that he's already received for that shipment of methamphetamine. That's not an acceptable outcome to the Attorney General. If the Assembly does not adopt the Dash 14 amendments and the Supreme Court sustains ballot measure 3 when it ultimately rules, then the situation I've just described will continue to be the status quo during the interim, and that's not acceptable to the Attorney General. Therefore, the Attorney General supports the Dash 14 amendments, and I would gently disagree with some of the other advocates for those amendments. And I would suggest that these are not ideal. These are not the amendments that we would draft if we were writing the very best forfeiture law that we could write. Personally, I think we did that in 1989, and it's been downhill ever since. But Madam Chair and members of the committee, we deal today with the possible and the real, and the possible and the real is the status quo as I've described to you.
Okay.
And as compared to the Dash 14s, and given the possibility that that status quo will continue, that's not an acceptable risk in the Attorney General's judgment, and we are strong supporters of the Dash 14s.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard. Now that you are raising all numbers of questions for my committee members, Senator Farrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, just a comment for Mr. Shepard. Regardless of the pride of authorship in the original 1989 version of the forfeiture bill, the people did not agree.
Mr. Chair, that's some of the water under the bridge that makes this deal with the practical today and the possible rather than the ideal.
The ultimate critics, Mr. Shepard. Mr. Fedanke, please, Madam Chair. You indicated that this bill does not wholly implement the Measure 3. If you could just touch on the issues that you think this is somewhat deficient in.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Farrioli, I'm not sure that I would say that this measure is deficient as much as I would say that I agree that if we had adopted these changes to the civil forfeiture law in 1999, there would not have been a ballot measure 3. There are provisions of ballot measure 3. There were a number of people involved in the drafting of that ballot measure. And some of the provisions that are included in ballot measure 3 are extremely inflexible. And one of those provisions was the nexus between the property and the crime of conviction. And that was an issue that really came to light for those of us who were involved in the drafting of ballot measure 3 during the 2001 legislative session when we hammered out the provisions of the criminal forfeiture law. So I think there's a very good case to be made that the nexus in the Dash A14 amendments is the correct nexus to have. Now, that's not to say it can't be improved, but ballot measure 3 required the state to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the property was related to the crime of conviction. And that can be an almost insurmountable burden for the government in a case where there is an ongoing criminal enterprise and the government has enough evidence to convict the defendant of one or more crimes that are part of that same continuing criminal enterprise, but not all of the crimes. You know, if you have someone who's been involved in the illegal drug trade for months or years, it's going to be very, very difficult to prove beyond a reasonable doubt in a criminal proceeding that all of that criminal activity took place. What these amendments will allow is for the government to prove, depending on what kind of property is, either by preponderance or by clear and convincing evidence, that there was that pattern of criminal activity, that it was similar to the crimes for which the defendant was convicted, and convince a jury or a judge, if there is no jury, that the government has met the burden of proof. That is a huge step forward from where the law was prior to Measure 3. Because prior to Measure 3, all the government had to show was probable cause that the property was related to criminal activity. They could use hearsay evidence to establish probable cause. Under these amendments, the government will have to show, using evidence that's normally admissible, excluding hearsay, they will have to carry their burden of proof before the defendant has to put on their case. And that is a big change. We don't think, I think all of us that were sitting around the table believe that in most cases the government will be able to carry that burden. And that in most cases, prior to Measure 3, the government could have carried that burden. What these amendments will do, assuming they take effect, is eliminate the possibility of someone losing their property if they are charged and found not guilty. The government will not be able to forfeit property in that situation. If someone is never arrested under the old law, prior to Measure 3, they could have lost their property if they couldn't prove beyond a preponderance that the property was gained lawfully. So the burden has shifted here. Ballot Measure 3 would have required clear and convincing evidence for both personal and real property. This only requires that for real property. But we think this is language that everyone can live with, that will work well for property owners and will work well for deterring criminal activity and making sure that when the government forfeits property because of criminal activity, it is actually forfeiting property from criminals, not from suspects.
Madam Chair?
Sarah Ferriello.
I heard five things. I just want to make sure I heard them correctly. The first is that this bill, if enacted, will enable forfeiture. The second thing I heard is that, in fact, it is a limitation of the powers of government. The third thing that I heard is that it would require a conviction for forfeiture. The fourth thing that I heard is that it makes a very clear requirement for a nexus between the crime and the fruits of the crime. And the fifth thing I heard is that it actually raises the standard of evidence. And I think those are the things that I was needing to hear in order to support a civil forfeiture bill.
Madam Chair, I agree, and I think Mr. Shepard will agree also.
Madam Chair and Senator Ferrioli, I agree four of the five descriptions. The one that I have a little hesitation in terms of your description, I don't think Mr. Fedanke intended to convey this, the nexus between the criminal conviction and the scope of forfeiture, the property that's exposed to forfeiture, is that the criminal conviction must be similar to the connection is similarity, not identity, right, of the crime of conviction, which is maybe the same thing you were saying, Senator. But
I think I understand, and let me just clarify my understanding. It is not each dollar for each gram. It is a criminal enterprise involving the substance and the proceeds of that criminal enterprise.
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, there are others who are here who are actively practicing in this area, and I would defer to their expertise on this question. But as I read the bill, the only language in the bill is the word similar. And I heard Mr. Fedanke suggest a content to that, but I would gently suggest that was not the content that he suggested was not part of the negotiations of the group. That is to say, similarity was intended to be a broadening, the use of that term, substitution of that term for the direct identical gram for dollar connection that you described. The substitution of the term similarity was intended to broaden the scope of forfeiture's reach, not to narrow it. So that may be an issue that Mr. Fedanke and we will litigate in the future, that is, to the definition of the term similar.
Madam Chair, if I could just follow up. I agree with what Mr. Shepard has said. One of the other things I want to emphasize here is that I think all of the parties understand that some fine-tuning of this may be necessary as we move forward. One of the things that these laws also reenact and continue is the existence of the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Advisory Committee, on which Senator Ferrioli and I serve. And I expect that, assuming that these provisions go into effect during the interim, that we will be looking at some of those issues and continuing to keep an eye on how the process is actually working with an eye towards, if there are either some unforeseen problems or overzealousness that occurs even with these additional changes, that the legislature can then consider additional proposals for modifications.
Thank you. Anything further? Mr. Hendricks?
Senator, I just want to mention one thing that I didn't mention in talking on the 50,000-foot level. The civil forfeiture distribution statutes have been substantially changed with very different distributions. The criminal forfeiture distribution formula has not been changed. And because of that, we actually had to revise certain other statutes that also sunsetted on July 31st, and they're at page 98, sections 43 and going up to 46, which basically needed to be reenacted so that money had someplace to go, and it will continue to be distributed as it has been over the last 4 years while those laws have been in effect.
Thank you. Anybody else dying to testify on behalf or against this bill? Thank you. Chair would close the public hearing, open a work session, move the Dash 14 amendments. Any discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Yes.
Aye.
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 Chair votes aye. Motion passes. Representative Olson, you faced a huge challenge. I don't know if you knew how huge your challenge was on this committee. Representative Przanski, you took a huge risk. We don't know what the Oregon Supreme Court was going to do on ballot measure 3. You both turned it into an incredible opportunity. Thank you for your hard work. Chair would move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Yeah. Any further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Any further business to come before the committee?
For the old session?
Carry on. I'm going to have Przanski carry it, but Jenny wants to carry it. Returned.
Is this the last Rules Committee?